like that intro. Welcome back to the Rotobahn podcast, people. Pete Davidson here on a late Wednesday morning. Hope you guys all caught the pod yesterday with Lord Reeves. As per usual, he was dropping a lot of knowledge, and I'm really glad I was able to get that sound file back into working order. If you did not catch my conversation with Rich Rebar yesterday, I strongly recommend doing so. Not for my stuff, which you have heard ad nauseum all August, but because Reeves really brings a special outlook to the table. And you can find that on my Podbean feed. If you've already subscribed to the podcast, it should be sitting there waiting for you. And also, it's sitting there in my my Twitter feed. So not hard to come by. Check it out. I think it's worth your while. And you may notice the song Eminence Front playing in the background. That is for my guest today, Martin Frank, a guy I've known my whole life. Marty and I used to drive around in my mom's car listening to The Who, so I thought it'd be a good song for the intro. Martin is a really good writer and an excellent beat reporter for the Eagles. He works for the Delaware News Journal. You can find his stuff at DelawareOnline.com. And we'll be getting to my conversation with Martin in a moment. Had a good chat. But before we get to that, I just want to mention there will be a rankings update later today. Didn't really have much player movement yesterday. By the time I fixed the podcast, I didn't have enough time to get it up anyway. So that'll be going up today. Nothing major. Looking at maybe moving Melvin Gordon up. There's some rumors that he might sign. That obviously is a big deal. So we'll have rankings update today. We'll have another one tomorrow and on Friday. I just want to give you a heads up. I will be away drafting this weekend. So you probably won't see a rankings update Saturday or Sunday. I probably will try to do something Monday if I can when I get back, if I get back early enough. If not, it may be Tuesday morning. So you'll have to live with that Friday update for a couple days. My apologies on that. So keep your head on a swivel, make your own adjustments, do what you got to do. And also this weekend, even though we're going away, Jimmy Hackett and I, Jim's in the draft as well. We're going to record the show Friday. You'll be able to hear it Sunday morning as always. And we'll also be recording a podcast. We'll be going through some of the values we see. So the podcast will record Friday. It'll go up late Friday night, early Saturday morning. So if you're subscribed to the pod on WEI, you'll have it. Otherwise, look for that. I'll try to tweet it out. So we're all done with the windup. Kick back and enjoy my conversation with Martin Frank. Okay, folks, at this time, we are going to sit down and chat with my good friend, Martin Frank, who works the Eagles beat. Martin writes for the Delaware News Journal. You can find his stuff at DelawareOnline.com. Martin, did I get all of that right?
Yes, Pete, that was very well done. Thank you.
Picking up on your sarcasm. Welcome back to the pod, Martin. You are a friend of the podcast. Had a great time last time you were here. You turned us on to Trey Burton. And as I was mentioning yesterday to Lord Reeves, I actually really did well. Just like if I did not have you on that podcast, I would have not been able to make a trade for a number one pick about a month ago. So I owe you a beer. We're not going to be having it now.
I do have some AM ale at some point.
No, you're definitely going to be collecting at some point. Now, before we get into anything here, one thing. Can you just shout out your Twitter handle for folks? I think you're M Frank NFL, yep. At M Frank NFL.
Yep, that's exactly right. Uh-huh.
Okay, so if Eagles information is something you desire, you're not going to find a better source of it than Martin, just so you know. And before we jump into the stuff I had planned, we had some stuff pop up yesterday. DeSean Jackson with a broken finger.
Yes.
Can you illuminate on that before we get into some other stuff?
Well, there's not much to illuminate on. I mean, it happened during the time when practice was closed to the media, so we didn't really find out about it until afterwards. But from what everyone is saying, the Eagles don't seem too concerned. They're going to, try to fit him with a splint today. And, they're expecting him to be ready for, week one, September 8th against Washington. I haven't seen anything really saying otherwise, and we won't really have a chance to talk to the Eagles about it until after the game Thursday night. So,
okay. But at this point, it's sort of par for the course, probably not going to be something that affects his game day status week one. That's the idea. So
yeah. Far. Yeah. That's the impression we're all getting. I mean, it shouldn't be anything seriously. You know, they still have, what, 10 days until week one starts. And, I mean, I guess you can play with a broken finger, right?
Well, you definitely can. We've seen receivers do it before. Do we know which finger it is?
It's the ring finger on his left hand, I believe.
Okay. Well, that, yeah, ring finger's not too bad. Index would be worse.
That would be pretty bad.
yeah, for sure. So much to talk about with this team. Let's just, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to go through the depth chart. Let's start with the quarterback room. I know you guys brought in McCown. I think they like Thorson for the long term. How do you see this QB room shaping up? Like the final roster, what do you see the QBs?
Obviously Carson Wentz will be the starter. I don't think there's...
Yes. And by the way, I'm going to just cut you off for 1 second. I apologize. But we had Martin on this podcast a few years ago, and he said before the season that Carson Wentz, he thought, was going to have a huge year. And this was before Wentz had really done anything. I said, yeah, I like him long term. Martin said he's going to have a huge year. And just to give Martin a pat on the back, he was on like an MVP pace until that end zone dive that ended in an ACL injury. So Martin's got a little bit of chops when it comes to analysis, folks.
I would also say that he's going to have a big year this year.
He's moving well, based on what you're seeing?
I mean, he's fully healthy from the knee. I mean, last year, you can kind of tell he wasn't as mobile as he was the year before. Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with, sure, you can still play, you know, a year after surgery, but it takes like another year, basically, until you're fully, you know, 100%. I mean, we haven't seen Wentz play in any of the preseason games. And we haven't really seen him move around the pocket much just because it's in a controlled practice setting and stuff. But, like, he's leaner. He's throwing well. He's got great weapons around him, you know, better even than 2 years ago.
It's really unreal what they've done with the weaponry. I mean, it's crazy. So do you think ultimately it'll be like Wentz, Thorson on the deep part, and then McCown sort of right behind backing up? Is that probably where this is going?
I'm not sure Thorson makes the team. He might, because they have Nate Sudfeld, who's right now out with the broken wrist. And up until they signed McCown, Sudfeld was going to be the backup quarterback. But now, you know, obviously they have McCown, and McCown's going to be the backup. And Sudfeld's probably out till late September, maybe early October. So I don't think they're going to put him on IR, in which case the three would be Wentz, McCown, and Sudfeld. And
then maybe they try to sneak Thorson on a practice squad or something
and,
like
and,
that.
You know, Thorson hasn't looked great. He hasn't really looked good in the preseason.
He's an interesting player. I mean, he's sort of Bortles-like, but not as I don't want to say stupid, just doesn't. He processes better than Blake.
He's pretty smart, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, right. Give the man some respect. Look, we won't spend too much time on the QBs because it's the Wentz show. And I love what they did with McCown. I assume that the mood in the building was good when they brought McCown in, because that gives you an eraser for a couple weeks. If something happens, you can get through a tough patch with McCown. He actually, for the Jets, he really legitimately played some good quarterback.
Yeah, 2 years ago he was like a legitimate starter. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he started almost every game for them, right?
Yeah, this is probably something that's been said a million times in Philly since they brought him in, but he gives you a little bit of that Foles factor where you've got that veteran presence, a guy who, you know, won't bat an eye if he has to go in there, even in a big spot. So there has to be a sort of a comfort level having him around, I would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, whoever... If Wentz gets hurt again, I mean, whoever the backup is, whether it's McCown or Sudfeld, the Eagles are probably screwed. I don't think either one of them is as good as Foles was. But, you know, I mean, it's a good insurance policy to have. I mean, if you need McCown to play for a game or two, let's say if Wentz, like, tweaks an ankle or something like that, you know, and he's only out a week or two, then fine. You can still win with McCown. But, like, Wentz were to suffer another season-ending type of injury and you needed one of those guys for a long term, I think the Eagles would be in pretty big trouble anyway. So, you know, it's what it is.
Well, it's a good thing you guys have a phenomenal offensive line, right?
Yeah, I mean, they invested in depth in pretty much every other position except quarterback because they had no money left. So, you know, they had to go all in on Wentz, and, you know, that's what happens. You know, for many years, the Colts, like, never had a backup for Peyton Manning, and it was great because Peyton Manning played every game until that one year where he hurt his neck, and they were screwed.
Of course, they did sort of, air quote, luck out on that whole scenario, at least up until this year. We're not even going to go there. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But let's jump over to the running backs, because the running backs are very compelling. I want to talk about the group and who you think is going to make the team, but I think most of the fantasy conversation here is centered on Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard.
Right.
Now, when I did my film on Sanders, I definitely was a little concerned about his handle, but I was also sort of blown away by what I saw my first hour watching film on this kid. I was like, wow, like they were really hiding a good player behind Barkley. We just didn't see him. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Eagles leaned in and they took him pretty high. So my question to you is, has he looked good in camp? And then also, I've noticed that his handle looks a little better. I think he's a little bit more high and tight, and I like that he's using a second hand on inside runs most of the time. Do you think that's been a focus for the coaching staff to firm up his technique? And do you think the coaches are really sort of targeting him as a big part of the offense?
Well, the way I look at Miles Sanders is – I think as the year goes on, you're going to see him become a bigger and bigger part of the offense. So, like, you know, maybe the first part of the season, you know, you'll see Jordan Howard get the bulk of the carries. And when I say the bulk of the carries, Jordan Howard's not going to be like a 20 to 25 carry per game type of guy.
Right.
I mean, the Eagles have never really done that. But
not in this era, though.
No, not – yeah, under Doug Peterson. They like a rotation. Right. They're going to use Darren Sproles on third down, passing situations and stuff like that. But I think as the season goes on, like, you know, you might see Jordan Howard be like the 15-carry guy, and then eventually that will become Miles Sanders. And what I've seen from Miles Sanders, I remember like this one practice in particular – they were working on goal line red zone drills. So they gave
right.
They handed the ball off to Sanders at about the 7-yard line, and he just barreled his way like right up the middle, you know, knocked over a couple guys and got in the end zone. So right there you saw his power. And then like about on the next series, you know, he lined up in the backfield, he ran this wheel route. And he like blew past a linebacker, caught the pass, and you know, he would have gone all the way for a touchdown, you know, if there was actual real defense on the field or something like that. But
so this is good to hear, right? Because like now the word chess piece is suddenly in my mind, right? Because Jordan Howard, as much as I like Jordan Howard, and from what I've seen in the preseason, he looks like he's running fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But Sanders gives them that element because we know that the Eagles like to be like multiple
yes.
when they get down inside like the 10. It feels like Sanders is the guy that gives them the most variability. And you're saying he can also be powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you're right. Maybe second half of the season, this guy could be a real find. Maybe
yeah.
he's a guy we want to draft and hold.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. You know, Howard, for as good a runner as he is, he's not considered a good receiver out of the backfield.
You're being kind. Well,
you know. But Sanders.
Yes. Listening audience, Martin is probably the nicest person I know. So just so you know, he's not going to shiv these guys.
Yeah. Like Sanders can do both. I mean, you know, we've seen it in the preseason. Maybe not in the games, but what I've seen in practice is, you know, the guy has speed. He can catch the ball. You know, he can run after the catch and stuff. That's not Jordan Howard's thing. So, I mean, right. I could definitely – even, like, in the early part of the season, maybe Howard is the guy on first and or second down. But, like, if you're facing a second and long, you know, bring in Sanders. You can throw the ball. You can run the ball with him. You know, third down, same type of thing. And I think as the season goes along, you know, they'll rely more and more on Sanders and maybe not as much on Jordan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely makes sense. I mean, as the rookie curve sort of softens for Sanders, he should become better and better. So these guys are pretty easy to sort of see how they fit. And you're talking about Sproles on third down, you know, obvious passing situations as a change of pace kind of thing. And I assume that Sproles pretty much looks like Sproles.
Well, I mean, I think so. Like, you know, they've held a lot of these guys out of the preseason games. So, like, you know.
They're not making the 90-year-old running back prove himself.
No, they're not. but, like, from what I've seen, like, you know, he looks fast to me. I mean, you know, he's Darren Sproles. The guy's like an ageless wonder.
It really is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would have brought him back if they didn't think he could still run like he used to. And, you know, the guy's a workout fiend during the offseason. I mean, he's famous for, you know, going to San Diego, working out with Drew Brees and a bunch of other guys. And, you know, he kept himself in great shape. I mean, I think he knew all along that he was going to play this year, you know, whether it was with the Eagles or somebody else.
He loves the game, you know. He's just one of those guys. Do you think – so I think we can guarantee Sanders, Howard, and Sproles making the team. And then we've got guys like Corey Clement, Boston Scott, Wendell Smallwood is still there. Any other running back names that you think we should even be talking about besides the guys?
I mean, there's also Josh Adams who
rushing
last year. But like,
I know they've been, you know, it's weird. They were so high on him at one point last year, but they seem to have soured on Adams. I was impressed with the way he ran at times last year.
Yeah, he's a good runner, but like, he's kind of one dimensional. He's not a very good, you know, you can't really rely on him in the passing game.
Right.
I think as the season went on last year, it got to the point where teams knew that if he was in the game, it was just, you know, to be a runner.
Yeah, I remember being sort of like the way they featured him, if memory serves, against the Saints. I was like, wow, this is an interesting choice Peterson is making in this game. But to your point, with Howard's skill set, that would sort of make him a little redundant, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And the same thing with Boston Scott. I mean, before they brought back Sproles, you can – you know, make a case, you know, this guy could be the punt returner and kick returner. Well, obviously that's not going to be the case now.
He's definitely an exciting guy though, right? Is he a guy who has some fun on the practice field? Is he like sort of fun to watch? Because he's insanely quick.
Oh yeah, and he's also like this physical specimen.
Right.
I mean, he's only like 5'6", but he's like 210 pounds and like, I think he's like a champion bodybuilder or something like that.
Yeah, so he's a guy that's always had my attention just because I love the way he runs. He's a passionate player. You think he might be able to stick around on some level? Maybe they'll try to keep him on the practice squad or
practice. Yeah, it's practice squad, I think.
Okay, well that's cool. He's a guy I definitely like. But so basically, we're feeling like the pecking order is pretty much what we thought going in. Sanders and Howard sort of banging it out for the lead gig with Sproles filling in. When they see that to be advantageous. Is there anything you think needs to be said on these backs that we didn't hit? Anything you've seen that's interesting?
Like beyond those three, like you assume the Eagles will keep at least four. So like, is it Corey Clement who, you know, is coming off the knee injury, but, you know, he played a lot in the last preseason game against the Ravens and seemed to be okay.
And he seems to give them some versatility. Like, he can be a banger, but he can play passing downs. Seems like he's a guy who's not going to get cut to me.
Yeah, and, you know, what do they do with Wendell Smallwood? I mean, you know, here's a guy who over the past 3 years has proven that, you know, if you need, you know, if you need him in a certain situation, he can come through. I mean, he's not an every down type of back, but he can – also catch the ball out of the backfield. He can do some different things for you.
You know, I'm a fan of Smallwood. We've talked about it before. The problem for Wendell, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that he's just had like when that knee keeps heating up on him when he gets volume. It's like that. I don't know if it's still bugging him, but for a couple of years, it was like any time they gave him too much, that knee would get sore.
It was that. And I mean, he just never really.
exploded.
Distinguished himself. Yeah, yeah, that's a good word for it. As like an every down type of guy right. that you can rely on. And, you know, I mean, he is what he is, but he's still serviceable. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles try to trade him before Saturday.
They're going to have to cut somebody who's pretty solid. They're going to have to cut someone
who's I mean, you know, good. You're looking at like a guy like Josh Adams. I mean, he's probably not going to make the team, and he was their leading rusher last year. And, you know, if they tried, I mean, I'm sure if they exposed him to waivers, you know, somebody would pick him up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Tampa and Houston are sort of sitting there licking their chops, looking at like, Foster and a couple others.
But that's the way it is. I mean, they can't keep – five or six running backs. So, you know, if they'll try to trade somebody, and if not, like a couple of good backs will be exposed to the waiver wire, and maybe they can get one of them to the practice squad, maybe not, you know, just something they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. So we'll find out, I guess, in the next 10 days on that. Now let's jump down to the tight ends. And now this is, I think, pretty standard stuff. First off, is there anybody you think we even need to know about other than Goddard and Ertz?
Probably not. Richard Rodgers like hurt his foot, and I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do with him. I mean, it would seem like, you know, he would be a long shot now to make the team. You know, you can't really, I mean, I don't know if it's worth, like if they put him on IR before Saturday, then, you know, he's out for the season. I don't see the point of doing that with someone, you know, at his age. But then if they wait and put him on IR with the designation to return, I don't know what the point of that is either.
And you have a limitation on how many times you can do that, right?
Yeah, you can only bring two guys back off IR. Right. So I don't really see him making the team. And like, if they're going to go with the third or fourth guy, it could be someone like Josh Perkins or
oh, that's Alex. Right. He's been having a good camp, right?
Yeah, yeah, he made the team last year out of training camp, and he had like, you know, he had a couple catches here and there, and he ended up hurting his knee and going on IR. But, you know, they like him. I mean, he can definitely do what Richard Rodgers did as the third tight end. And
right, and this guy's basically going to be just sort of a functional asset. He's not going to be any significant part of the passing game.
Right.
And obviously, I'm just moving very quickly to what I care about, which is. Guys who are going to catch passes.
Yes. So, you know, tight end will catch a lot of them.
Oh man. Now this is actually, I want to get your feedback on this. In the fantasy community, this is probably not something they're talking a whole lot about in Philadelphia, but in the fantasy community, it's become pretty sort of, it's sort of the consensus view that Ertz is going to regress this year. And now, clearly, when you catch as many balls as he caught the year before, and when you were targeted that many times, yeah, something's probably going to come back to earth a little bit. I don't have a problem with that. But I don't feel like all this new talent, I feel like the one person who's not going to get affected all that much by more surrounding talent is Zach Ertz, because he's just so central to the way the Eagles play. And I know he's tight with the quarterback, and he runs the routes that are always going to be sort of apparent for the quarterback. I just sort of feel like his role, that 80 to 90% of the snaps, heavy targets, I just feel like it's going to stick. Do you see them going away from Ertz in any meaningful way compared to last year? I mean, again, I know some of the crazy big target games were due to injury and we're going to lose some of those, but the general weekly usage of Ertz, do you see it changing?
It's hard to say. Like, I know the Eagles want to use more 12 personnel this year with like two.
And Goddard had a lot of 50% plus snap games last year. Yeah. And I'm just bringing that up because Goddard can play 50, 60% of the snaps, and it doesn't seem to have a huge impact on Ertz's snaps. At least last year, if you look at the numbers, that's the way it worked out. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a valid point. Ertz will be out there 80 to 90% of the time. And I guess the question is, like, how do you juggle everything else around? Because you're not only, like, looking at Ertz and Goddard, but you're also looking at them in relationship to the wide receivers. You know, Alshon Jeff needs his touches. DeSean Jackson needs his touches. You know, Nelson Agholor needs his, you know, He just touches.
Right. I was just about to mention Aguilar. It almost seems to me that Goddard and Aguilar are almost in a competition for their formation of choice, if you will. Like, you know, when they go with the extra tight end, I think Aguilar loses. Yeah. And when they don't, Goddard loses. Is that in a general kind of round way? Does that make sense?
Yes, except like down towards the red zone, because then I don't see DeSean Jackson being in there very often. But then, you know, they'll bring in a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, the rookie wide receiver, who is known for being pretty good on 50-50 balls, kind of like a mini Alshon Jeffrey. And, you know, they'll probably go to him a little bit more in the red zone.
Yeah, that touchdown he had last week, he had a beautiful release and then a nice little break on his route. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember what cornerback he was on, and maybe it's a cornerback that is now on the street. I don't know. But it was really a nice release and a nice move. Have you been seeing that type of stuff on a regular basis?
Yes.
In practice?
Yes. I think he will be somebody who will have kind of an impact, especially down in the red zone. I mean, right now you're looking at a rookie who's probably the fourth wide receiver on the team, you know, so it's hard to kind of see him consistently putting up numbers from week to week. But, you know, if you get down to like the 15-yard line and, you know, you bring him in, you know, they can throw to him in the end zone. They can throw to they can throw to Goddard. They can throw to Ertz. I mean, it's just like,
oh, their red zone weaponry is crazy. I mean, you got both of those tight ends who are, you know, big and have ball skills. And then obviously Alshon's a guy who can go up and get it at the top shelf. And Whiteside, not only can he play, you know, up a level in the air, he's also a guy who's really good at bodying people. Like his Stanford film, like he gives a guy a hip and he's open. So there's a lot of ways that the Eagles can attack you down near the stripe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like the hard thing, you know, is to figure out like who's going to be like the go-to guy, you know, like, I mean, obviously you got Ertz.
Maybe Peterson doesn't even want
one. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you want to keep it as varied as you can. I mean, you can go to guys out of the backfield too. I mean, those running backs can be, you know, we talked about Miles Sanders and you got Sproles. I mean, you know, it's a lot of options.
No, and that's the one thing, one of my online buddies, Johnny Rumford, always likes to say, like, when you have one of these situations where there's just great targets all over an offense, just buy the quarterback. He likes to say, you know, you buy the syrup, not the pancakes. And this is sort of one of those teams where it's like, man, I have no idea where this ball's going. I'm just going to buy Wentz. And he's, you know, for what it's worth, in my opinion, a real value right now. But the one guy that I still trust is Ertz, just because I feel he's so central to it. And his, you know, he's the one guy where he hasn't missed a lot of time in the last couple of years. He's been like just so in the middle of it, literally and figuratively. And I think if I'm not mistaken, you might even be the person who told me this, but, and I don't want to get into narrative stuff because, you know, sometimes we put too much stock in it. But when you have a quarterback who hangs out with one of his receivers off the field, that's generally a good thing.
I mean, you know, Ertz considers Wentz and vice versa like one of his best friends and everything like that. And there was actually some criticism from an unknown player, unnamed player, like last year.
Yeah, I caught some of that.
Yeah, like, you know, Ertz was like too much of a safety blanket, you know, and stuff like that. But Nick Foles targeted Ertz just as much as Wentz did. There wasn't really any.
It almost seems like more.
Like there wasn't any difference, you know what I mean? I mean, but is Ertz going to get 116 catches like he did last year? Probably not, but like 80 to 90, I mean, that's still pretty
That's where I'm
good.
At. Yeah, that's exactly, you just basically put up my projection. I'm seeing, I don't see him going over 100 again, but for folks who are thinking he's sort of going to go back to 2017, I don't see that either. Like, to me, he's turned a corner and he's like a really big time player now, and that's the way we should look at him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at the top tight ends in the NFL and, you know, Zach Ertz is definitely like top three.
And it's a repeatable paradigm is the important part, right? It's not, I mean, he didn't just like come out of nowhere. This guy had already established himself as being good. And now we have a healthy Wentz. And I guess the thing I look at this team is I see the four receivers. They all need time. We see running backs that are going to be interchangeable. So that one guy who tends to always be on the field, to me, the quarterback's going to just that A, they like each other. They've got experience together. There's trust. And then he's the one guy who's always going to be in rhythm. And I don't want to get too touchy-feely, but I think there's something to that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if Wentz is going through his progressions and he's looking deep down the field and he doesn't see anybody and, like, the rush is starting to get to him, I mean, yeah, he's dumping the ball off to Zach Ertz.
Exactly. No, that's
just the way it is, and it's the way it's always been. I mean, I don't know if he's doing it because they're best friends or anything. He's doing it because
he's open.
He usually finds a way to get open. He's a tough guy to cover because he's big and he's fast. And if you're putting a safety on him, well, he's got the height advantage. If you're putting the linebacker on him, he's got the speed factor. So, you know, it's just the way it is. Like, he will be the guy that he'll dump the ball off to if it's a situation like that, if he's not, like, one of the top targets. So, yeah, I mean, Ertz will always be heavily involved in the offense. Yeah, definitely.
That's really well said, because even when he's not the number one option, the ball finds him a fair amount of the time. So that's a pretty good place to be if you're trying to rack up targets. Let's talk about Goddard for a second as well, because first of all, just because he's fun. I mean, he's just a fun guy. I mean, anybody who's got those kind of ball skills, and he can make a wide array of catches. As much as I'd like Ertz, Goddard is sort of fun to watch. I'm going to just take a stab and say that he's fun to watch at practice as well. Give me some feedback.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is he hasn't practiced in the last, what, 2 or 3 weeks because of the calf injury. Like, the first preseason game, he hurt his calf, but he was having a great game. I mean, he played like a quarter, had 3 catches for 50 yards, I think.
And he's not targeted to miss, like, significant time, though, right? Like,
no, they expect him back week one. Right. I think, you know, they just didn't want to take any chances. He kind of started practicing this week. He, you know, individual drills type of thing. And I think the plan is, like, next week he'll start doing team drills. They expect him to be ready for week one. I don't think it's a, you know, I think they just want to take him to take some time off, you know, not take any chances in the preseason games. So,
And young guys sometimes push themselves a little too hard.
Yeah. But I think Goddard, I mean, he's an amazing receiver. Like, I mean, I remember even watching film of him at South Dakota State, and like,
oh yeah, it was great film.
Like,
yeah.
Diving backwards, falling down, catching.
One-handed.
Yeah, I mean.
Left-handed, one-handed, then a right-handed, one-handed.
Yeah, I think we were watching the same thing, because I was, like, looking at that, like, oh, my gosh, this guy can catch everything. And, you know, he didn't really get a whole lot of time last year. I think, like, as the season went on, he started getting a little bit more. But, I mean, I think the Eagles know what they have in this guy. I mean, you know, if he was on.
I mean, you're right.
If he was on almost any other team, he would be.
Starting.
Yeah, he would be starting. He'd probably be what Zach Ertz is to the Eagles, like, you know, kind of like
their
go-to guys and stuff like that.
And to your point, you know, he comes out of the box playing 22%, 24% of the snaps early on. Mm-hmm. And then over the first half, he was sort of, you know, fiddling around with that 50% number. Then he dipped, but closing the season, just to your point, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, last 6 games, his snap rates are 55, 52, mm-hmm. 60, 61, 59, and 62. So he's down the stretch. He's on the field more often than not last year.
Right.
So the reason I'm going there is a lot of people who are looking for a role increase. I don't know how much role increase you have over, say, 55, 60% of the snaps. So maybe I'm wrong, but unless the Eagles are going to start playing double tight end on like 80% of their plays, Goddard's going to have to just sort of earn more targets within the role he has.
Yeah.
But I'm more than willing for you to break some news here and tell me that they're just going to play Goddard all the time.
Well, I don't.
But it's sort of hard for me to see the numbers
there. Yeah, I think if you look back to those, you know, playing 55 to 60% of the time, like towards the end of last season, you also have to keep in mind they didn't have DeSean Jackson like last year. So, you know, I mean, he's going to have to play a lot. DeSean is going to play quite a bit, obviously, or else he's not going to be happy. And, you know,
that's an interesting point. So, because what you're saying is, even though DeSean and Goddard don't necessarily fight for space in the same spot on the field. Mm-hmm. The fact that they've got a playmaker like Deshaun, maybe they're not as compelled to get Goddard out there because they have enough playmakers. Well, is that sort of what you're saying?
A little bit. I mean, I look at a guy like Nelson Agholor more. Like, he played pretty much 80-90% of the snaps last year.
Okay, that's really interesting because, first of all, you're dead on. People don't realize how many snaps Agholor played. He played 985 snaps. That's only 15 less than Ertz. Yeah. I mean, when you go down the stretch, even after Golden Tate was on the team, he's playing 94, 98, 90, 90 down the stretch. Right. I think a lot of people don't realize how much Agholor plays.
Yeah. No, and we've often wondered that too. Like, I mean, before last year, the year before, you know, when Agholor was struggling, like, he was still playing like 80% of the snaps, and we were like, why? And
they like this guy.
Yeah, but like, at some point, somebody's got to lose some snaps. You know what I mean? Like,
right. No doubt. When you look at this depth chart, it's like, okay, how do they get these guys on the field?
Right. So, like, let's say you're in 12 personnel and Ertz and Goddard are the two tight ends on the field. Well, then, you know, Alshon Jeffrey's got to be on the field. Who's the other wide receiver? It's either going to be Deshaun or Agholor. And basically, like, if Ertz and Goddard are in the field, you don't need a slot receiver.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you've got two guys working on the inside. So you line Deshaun out wide, and then Agholor sits. Or you can...
Right. And then you get, as they get down into the red zone, that can flip, and they can bring in Whiteside for Deshaun, perhaps.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, you can put Agholor out there in the red zone, I guess.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's just like...
Agholor from the slot, I mean, he's pretty dynamic from the slot when he's rocking. I've seen him make some really impressive slot receptions and then, like, take them away, you know, take them down to the house.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like his thing because, you know, he's got decent size. He's bigger than you would perceive as a slot receiver, a guy you would perceive as a slot receiver, but he's also really fast. So, you know, if you're covering him with the nickel corner who might not be like the fastest guy on the field, well, I mean, Nelson can kind of get behind him if it came to that and stuff. And, you know, he's okay at working in the middle of the field. He's not great at it, but, you know, he can definitely do it. So, you know,
one thing I did notice, and tell me if I'm wrong, before Wentz went down, he seemed to be starting to get sort of a comfort level with Agholor. They hit some big plays that year, mm-hmm. and then obviously things went south. Am I off? Is there sort of a comfort level with those two guys? They've been together now for what?
Four years. Yeah. I mean, Agholor came in 2015, Wentz in 2016. So the only... Right. Like, I remember the first game of that 2017 season, they played Washington down in Washington, and, like, Wentz was scrambling around. Like, Agholor was lined up in the slot. Wentz was scrambling around, you know, trying to avoid a rush, and then he just, like, stopped and threw it deep, and Agholor got behind, you know, the safety covering him in the middle and had like a 58-yard touchdown reception, I think it was. Something like that. It was like 50, 60 yards. And that kind of showed, like, you know, right then and there that, you know, A, the slot was a good position for Nelson, and B, that Wentz, you know, isn't afraid to go to him, like, deep down the field. And that's kind of like the weapon the Eagles have if they use Agholor in the slot, is he can go deep. I mean, it doesn't mean necessarily that he's doing the 10, 15 yard curl patterns. You know what I mean? Like, he can go deep.
Yeah. And he's got both in his toolbox. So, I mean, they really have, it'd be nice just to watch the Eagles play if all four receivers can stay healthy all year, just because the ability to mix and match, mm-hmm. to fit the situation, to match up with different defenses, they've got all kinds of ways to go after you.
So yeah, I'm
not talking fantasy now. I just think week to week, this might be fun.
Yeah,
to watch.
It would be fun to watch, but from a fantasy perspective, it could be maddening because, like, one week you're hoping, like,
right, for sure,
know, this one guy, you know, let's say if you have Agholor, one week he might not do anything, and then the next week,
I don't think many people are going to be starting Agholor.
Well, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, but like Deshaun Jackson, for example, I mean, he could. One week he might not get more than two or three targets. But at this,
well, right, for everybody to eat, Wentz has to like throw four touchdowns and throw for 400
yards.
It's
going to be hard to keep everybody. It's going to be hard to keep everybody happy. And like you said, everybody, you know, eating and stuff like that, because, you know, there are just so many options. You can go in so many different ways. And I kind of,
I totally agree. And you have a coaching staff that likes it that way. Like, they want to embrace that diversity. Like, they don't want to find ways to go to any one guy more. They want to find ways to keep the defense spread out.
Yeah, and you can see a lot of hurry up. I mean, you know, when Chip Kelly was the coach, that was always kind of like an offense he imagined, where he can kind of keep the same grouping on the field, but like do so many different plays with so many different players within that, you know, that one basic formation, because they were so versatile and they kind of have that. I mean, I can definitely see Doug Peterson go on a hurry up quite a bit with, you know, the same grouping right out on the field and, you know, just throwing defenses into like a tizzy basically, because they don't know, like, you know, who they're going to
right go if to. You get the right personnel grouping out there and you've got the mismatches you want, just start pushing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but then, you know, if they need to, they can slow it down and, you know, go into the huddle and substitute guys in and out and stuff and still have mismatches that they can take advantage
right
of.
And you've got that offensive line that can, you guys can bang the ball, you can protect, and man, Eagles are going to be good this year.
Yeah, I mean,
like, we all knew that anyway, but just talking to you, it's like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, this is and I try to like curb that with like, wait a minute. You know, it's, you know, there are a lot of good teams out there and stuff, but like, you start looking.
Yeah, but there's also the Giants and the Redskins.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, I definitely think the Eagles are in the conversation for one of the top teams in the NFC. And, you know, it's because of their offense. I mean, their offense is just so
well. You know what? Good. You know, look, let's move down this thing for a second so we can actually talk about the defense a little bit before I lose you here. And okay. I don't want to keep you too long. I know you definitely need to get moving.
Yeah, but wait, before you do that, if I could just add one thing, like,
no,
if you look at their Super Bowl season, like, the Eagles did not have a 1,000-yard receiver and they did not have a 1,000-yard rusher. And, you know, they still ended up winning the Super Bowl because they had so many different weapons. And I kind of see the same thing this year. Like, they're going to have
right
a lot of guys, let's say, receiving in the 500 to 1,000-yard area. And, you know, maybe rushing, they won't have a 1,000-yard back. But with Sanders and Howard, they could have two guys with, like, 700 or 800 yards. So that was
right. And as you said, you know, maybe Sanders doesn't put up a 1,000-yard season, but he could have a very effective second half right of the season. So he could feel like a 1,000-yard rusher in the second half. We may only have 500 or 600 at the end of the year, but for people who have him rostered down the stretch, fantasy playoffs, he could really
right. And Sanders could also be a guy who has over 1,000, you know, yards from scrimmage.
Right. You know, right. Maybe it's sort of a question of how quickly it happens, how quickly they gain trust.
Okay. But anyway, go back to and go to defense.
Let me ask you this. Now, we hit the big four receivers, though. Now, I know there is a little bit of a battle between, what is it, Greg Ward and Hollins for the last spot. Who do you think, A, does it matter? And B, is either one of those guys flashing to the extent where you think they're going to be the guy?
I think Greg Ward has definitely had the better preseason than Hollins has. And I could see a case where they're both on the team, but for Hollins, it's mostly because of his special teams. You know, he's considered like one of their top special teams guys. You know, he hasn't, you know, he missed all last year with that groin injury, and he hasn't really looked that good in practice or preseason. Like, I've seen him drop some passes that he probably should catch. And I've also, you know, in the preseason games, he hasn't done a whole lot. I mean, Greg Ward has definitely been better in those games. And I know they like Greg Ward. I mean, this is like his third summer with them. He spent time in the spring in the AAF league, and, you know, they were impressed. He seemed to have gotten a lot better. So I could see both of them making it, but I wouldn't expect much out of either one of them unless there are injuries.
All right. Gotcha. So this is still to be determined. So let's talk about the defense, just because the defense had so much to do with like the shape that the season took last year. I mean, the injuries were almost sort of hard to describe the degree and scope of like how many guys they lost, especially with the defensive mm-hmm. backs, if memory serves. Do you feel like they're in better shape right now to sort of get through 16 games?
They're healthier right now. There's still a couple question marks, right. Like Ronald Darby, their number one cornerback, is still kind of working his way back from the torn ACL he suffered last year. And,
right. You
know, it's kind of questionable as to whether he'll be ready for week one. I mean, he's starting to do more and more. The big question, though, is Fletcher Cox. He's not even like been seen at practice this week, and you're talking about 10 days until the regular season. You know, they keep saying he's still kind of on schedule for week one and stuff.
And he really makes that whole thing go, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, they're deeper at defensive tackle than they were last year. Last year, that was another position that was pretty much decimated other than Fletcher Cox, but always the guy next to him was kind of like either injured or a journeyman. But now they have Malik Jackson. Tim Jernigan is back, so they have more depth there. So, and at defensive end, you know, they lost Michael Bennett, they traded, and Chris Long retired. So that's 15 and a half sacks from last year that they have to replace. I mean, you got Brandon Graham.
A lot of veteran leadership too, right?
Yeah, you got Brandon Graham on the one side who's good. And they're expecting a lot from Derek Barnett at the other end, but he's coming off shoulder surgery. And, you know, he too is one of those injured guys trying to get back and stuff in time for, you know, the regular season week one. But I mean, Barnett is definitely supposed to be like one of their, you know, a really good pass rusher. And they definitely have high hopes for him. But like, you know, beyond that, there isn't a whole lot of depth. They have Vinny Curry as kind of like a third defensive end for passing downs and stuff like that. Linebacker. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, they've been pretty good against the run. Do you anticipate that to be the case again this year?
I think
so. If the bodies hold up.
Yeah, it's a big if. Linebacker, they're kind of hurting a little bit because Camus Grugier-Hill, who they expect to start, hurt his knee in training camp and, you know, isn't supposed to be back until like late September, early October. You know, Nigel Bradham's another guy who got hurt last year. He's still kind of working his way and may or may not be ready for week one. So, you know, if those two guys aren't playing week one, you know, you got Zach Brown and a guy, Nate Jerry, probably starting. And, you know, Zach Brown has a history of being pretty good, you know, when he was with Washington and Tennessee before that. But, you know, it's quite
– I mean, I'm looking
– definitely.
I mean, I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm – you know, if the Eagles' defense is good, I think the offense is going to be put away early a little bit in some of these games, like against Washington week one, Detroit week three. Yeah. Maybe Minnesota week six, perhaps the Jets week five, unless the Jets have actually learned how to play offense, which I have to say, I'm keeping an open mind. I mean, this is possible. I'm a Jet fan, so I'm obviously very skeptical, but there are more positive signs for a Jet offense than I've ever seen. So I have to at least acknowledge that. But if the Eagles are playing mediocre defense, then their offense could be leaning in for like the whole game. But it seems to me that in some of these games, they may just be blowouts where we may see a lot of Jordan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, definitely like week one against Washington, I would think, you know, if they can get out to a pretty good start and, you know, a big lead, they should be able to. I mean, Washington doesn't have a whole lot on offense. They should be able to put them away early. Detroit, yeah, like you mentioned.
In the fantasy world, we care about pace, right? We love to see two teams that will play fast with each other. And then you get a lot of possessions and you get more stats because there's more plays. And I'm looking at Detroit week three. I'm looking at Philly getting up, being able to run. Detroit basically wanting to play 20-minute football games if they can. Right. And it's like, yeah, that might not be good.
Yeah, but you also have to have a defense that can get off the field, you know, and get the ball back to the offense. So like if, you know, the defense is kind of struggling a little bit. Let's say you're facing a team with a good running attack, which Washington actually may have.
Yeah, they could. Geis looked okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty high on Geis, and, you know, it's just that, like, they have nobody to throw to, so you can kind of stack the box, I guess. And, you know,
I'm just going to whisper Terry McLaurin's name just very softly, but I'm a huge fan of Terry McLaurin. And you know what? This could be this division, just, you know, before we wrap up here, and I'm going to let you go. I know you got stuff. But this division, when you look at all these young quarterbacks, this could be a really good time in a couple years when it's, you know, when it's Haskins and Wentz and Jones and Dak. That could be a really fun division, say 2 or 3 years from now, if everybody stays and thrives.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting division right now. I mean, you know, even though Eli is probably going to be the quarterback to start the season at least, I mean, Saquon Barkley is amazing. I mean, you know, that guy is a total stud. You never know what's going on in Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott. Is he going to play or not or whatever? But, I mean, you know.
I just don't think Jerry Jones has the you know what to actually keep Zeke off the field. It's like everything they've gone through to get to this point, and they're actually going to now get tough with Zeke Elliott. It just doesn't make sense. But then again, I think this same time last year, Mart, I was saying that something similar about Le'Veon Bell. So what the hell do I?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm reading some places here and there that some of these running backs, like 3 or 4 years in, it's maybe not a bad idea to sit out a year just to kind of recharge the battery and stuff, but, you know.
Well, there's no doubt the CBA is not fair.
No, I mean, that's the thing. By the time they become a free agent, their shelf life is, you know, unless they're otherworldly, their shelf life is almost over. You know what I mean? And it's hard to invest.
Yeah, like if you're one of these running backs where you get a gig early, but you are not taken early, you end up getting a lot of tread taken off your tire at low money, and then teams are skeptical about signing you after your first deal is through. I was talking about this on Twitter the other day, but it almost feels to me like they need some type of usage component to how we compensate running backs. I don't know how to do it. I don't know, but it's clearly the CBA just is uniquely unfair to the position, and hopefully something gets done about it eventually, because you can't have these running backs holding out. But at the same time, as you mentioned, like it's really sort of tough to blame them.
Right. I mean, you know, a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, how many touches has he had the last 3 or 4 years? And, you know, the Cowboys are going to look at that and say, well, you know, you're what, 26, 27. You know, if we're lucky, you have 3 good years left in you. But I mean, that would still be outside of the norm for a running back. So, like, are they going to want to invest like millions and millions of dollars? I mean, you know, Le'Veon Bell went
through that. I mean, he's sort of a unique situation in that this is a team that sort of stuck by him when he got suspended. Yeah. I don't know. It sort of feels like, you know, this is a situation where they should meet. They should find a spot, because, I mean, the Cowboys have been pretty good to Zeke. You know, it's not like he plays for the Chargers or something where they're like notoriously doing their guys dirty. Like, I don't blame Melvin one bit. I think he's making the wrong choice. I think he should just cash his check. But I don't blame him for feeling sort of alienated or whatever you want to call it. In Zeke's case, I don't know, man. They took you really high. You've made a lot of money. You took a suspension that hurt the team. Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like he should take the money or just show up. But
yeah,
you know, but with due respect to the position as well. I mean, I understand where he and his agent are at. But the Cowboys, I mean, look, I don't like the Cowboys, but you have to say it sometimes. They've been pretty good to this particular.
Yeah, and at the same time, I mean, what were the Cowboys like without Ezekiel Elliott? I mean, can you rely on Dak Prescott to win a game for you? I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I haven't seen really much evidence of that. And here's another guy who's going to want to get paid. Like, if you're going to pay Dak Prescott
they've got money stuff. You're right.
$30 million a year. What's fair for Ezekiel Elliott? You know what I mean?
And they've got Amari money to deal with as well, right?
Yes, they do. So, you know, it's a tough situation for them. I mean, the Cowboys aren't going to be very good without Ezekiel Elliott. And at the same time, you know, Ezekiel Elliott wants to get as much as he can because he's only got a certain amount of carries, touches, years left, you know, in his body.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, Tony Pollard is exciting, and I'm sure that can work for them for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But he's not James Conner like, you know, who's got a body to handle 200 plus touches for the Steelers. I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen to Tony Pollard, like, say, after 150 touches or so.
Right.
So, you know, this might work for a period of time. But the idea that you're just going to sort of Pollard your way through the whole year, that might be sort of fool's gold. But anyway, my brother, it was really cool to have you on again. I would love to have you back at some point during the season if you can make the time.
Yeah, definitely.
And maybe next year, like I got the pod going late this summer. Like I was working through all the technical stuff. Otherwise, I would have tried to get you on earlier. But yeah, next year, we hopefully get you on before like the joint team practices and stuff like that, so we can get some nuggets and stuff.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. So, hey, man, thanks again, Mart. Really cool having you on. As always, you really sort of bring the wood, man. You have so much good information on the Eagles. Again, for folks who don't know of Marty's work, he really does a good job on a daily basis giving out good stuff on the Eagles. So, Mart, just in case people didn't hear it the first time, if you can, give us your Twitter handle.
All right, Twitter handle is mfranknfl, or if you want to go to my paper's website, it's DelawareOnline.com, and you can read all my work there too as well. So please do, and let me know what you think.
Cool. And Mark's an excellent writer, for what it's worth. And I'm telling you right now, if you're an Eagles fan, definitely follow Mark. He's constantly bringing good stuff to the table on Twitter. So that's going to wrap up this version of the Rotobomb podcast. I will be back next week. We're going to be sitting down with Elliot Crist, and hopefully we're going to get JM to win on the podcast as well. So there's more good stuff coming this preseason. Going to have a show on Friday with my buddy Jim Hackett on WEEI, so check that out. Jim and I will be on Sunday morning as always, and then every Sunday throughout the NFL season. So that's going to do it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.